All those books about girls and their horses.
Ew.
Not sexually.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, a show where we read and discuss all the genres of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them. Today we are a group of five, so I'm Anna Ferry, and I am a local librarian working the on-call circuit here in Vancouver.
I'm Megan White, also working the on-call public librarian circuit.
And I'm Amanda Warner, and I'm a health librarian, which has nothing to do with Reader's Advisory, and yet here I am.
And I'm Sam Mills, and right now I work in programming and teaching and also digital services, none of which are directly involved with Reader's Advisory, but it's still a very good skill to have when you're working with the public in any capacity.
Absolutely.
I'm Matthew Murray, and I'm just unemployed. And a librarian.
So just the life of a brand new graduate from an MLIS. So we're here today to talk about the genre historical romance. So we we had a variety of reactions to this. But let's start off by talking about our expectations for the genre, which could include our previous experiences with reading historical romance.
I had none.
You had no expectations?
I had no previous experience. My expectations were that they were terrible.
Uh-huh. I have to say, I don't think I've ever read, had ever read. Actually, I still haven't.
finished.
No, I read like the first 10 pages. I had never and still have never read a historical romance, I think, before this month.
I read a few. I went through a little kick at one point for about 3 months where I was like, all right, I'll read a bunch of romances and see what this is like. So I read mostly historical romances during
that
time.
Were they cowboy romances?
No. Well, I might have read one cowboy romance, but mostly it was like Regency era romances.
Regency era cowboys?
No. Not so much.
Maybe
that counts as knights. Yeah. So I had a little bit of experience. So I went into it actually originally intending to definitely not read anything in the Regency era. And then everything I tried that wasn't in the Regency era, I hated and could not finish. And then ended up finishing Regency era ones.
I actually ended up getting the book that I read for this handed to me at the end of a discussion about how I had joined this club with you guys and now I had to find one of these books to read and, it's going to be terrible. And then a person whose house I was at was like, read this one, it's not terrible. Which was not right.
Oh, that's actually great.
Yeah. I had read before. I know I'd read something really young, like 12, so I had certain expectations about the amount of erotica that would be within the genre.
Yes.
But then when I was 20, I remember going to the dollar store and picking up a Christian romance. Because I was studying religious studies at the time, so I was like, I'll read this because it sort of falls into what I'm studying. And it was about what you'd expect, had heavy Christian themes, you did no explicit sex. I don't think I expected necessarily to enjoy, but I knew that it would have been possible within the range of historical romances to find something I might be able to deal with.
Yeah, so it's about me too. I knew there was some, it was possible to find something I enjoy because I had in the past, but I didn't have a huge amount of luck this time. It's kind of interesting. So what did we actually
end up reading
and experiencing? What was it like?
Okay, I'm going to start. I think I read
5
different books.
What?
I cannot understand how you did that.
Did you finish all of them?
I finished all of them.
I can't even.
You beat all of us.
You are definitely the, like, main masochist this month.
I was A, unemployed, B, at home, and C, a little bit of a completionist. Okay, so the first one I read was hands down, well, not hands down, but definitely one of my favorites that fell directly into the genre. It was called The Countess Conspiracy by Courtney Milan, and it was about a woman who was a genius biologist, but unable to publish because the gender standards of the time, and so she was getting her friend to publish her work under his name for her. And then he decides he doesn't want to do that because that's lying and he's sick of it. And, of course, they have a love story and there's, you know, the tension that you would expect from a romance where they can't communicate very well. And so they argue a lot and or don't talk at all. And at the end, they get together, they have their happy ending, it's great. So I liked it because it had the woman with a biology background, and she's fiercely intelligent and not focused on getting a man or anything like that. Love happens to her, but it wasn't, like, her primary motivation.
Can I say that, actually, from my previous experience in reading some Regencies, I had run into a lot of female scientists from the Regency era who were experiencing various levels of troubles in being female scientists.
Really? It's
very interesting.
I mean, it makes some sense, right? Because the books, even though they're written to be set in a time when women were very empowered, they're supposed to appeal to women.
Yeah. Right, today.
And maybe that's some understanding on the part of the authors that it's not just the lovey-dovey part that we're interested in.
Right.
Yeah, I kind of expected more like the rape where the woman is expected to enjoy it. Because she was forced to?
I think that's more of a, like, 80s era version of what romance was.
Maybe. I didn't come across it at all in the ones that I read. So I was happy about that. The other ones that I read that I didn't enjoy so much was My Fair Concubine by Jeannie Lynn and Destiny's Captive by Beverly Jenkins.
I picked up one of the Jeannie Lynn ones, too, because it was the only one I could find that didn't have white people in it.
Yeah, so these two were among the my more diverse picks. Destiny's Captive involves a black hero, and the woman is a Spanish rebel, but they get married because she doesn't want to get arrested, and they fall in love because the author says so. Poorly written. In that
dance,
and,
puppets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but one of the interesting things about this one was it played into that little bit of a, like, the rich family fantasy that you see in Twilight, where the woman gets enveloped into this family that is miraculously rich and welcoming, and then just sort of the whole family embrace is part of what the fantasy is about. Not just the man, but the family that you join, as it were. I don't want to talk about My Fair Concubine. It just wasn't that interesting to me.
I also tried to read that Jeannie Lynn one, and I also did not. It just wasn't interesting. I couldn't do it.
I picked it up partially because I think it said there were sword fights. Did you guys get to that point?
Yes, I did get to one sword fight.
Was it any good?
Maybe two. I don't remember. That it wasn't interesting.
So that book gave you the same sell as the grandpa gives the kid in The Princess Bride.
Oh. Yeah. I don't think the follow-up quite counts the same.
I think it was partially because it focused a lot on the brooding alpha male who had to do the things he had to do for family and honor and whatever, and he wasn't good at talking about his feelings because alpha male, and I'm just like, I don't care. This is, okay, somebody else's fantasy, that's fine. The other one I read was 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake because Rebecca Shinsky mentioned it, and so I had to read it, and it was fine. It didn't excite me as much as some of the other ones, but it wasn't offensive, like a few that I read. And the last one was sort of a genre bender called The Iron Duke, which is actually steampunk. And I loved it because it had, like, Kraken and robots and all kinds of, like, the main character is a police inspector who has nanos, so she can't really die, but also she gets a lot of prejudice against her because she's part of an older era of oppression and things. So that was fantastic, but wasn't strictly historical romance. So, that was...
That sounds like my version of almost all of our, like, reading so far has been... Let me find the, like...
Genre bender?
Yeah, genre bender, and I will find that one.
Book club.
I read a paranormal romance that was historical in quotation marks as well, and someone actually complained to me in the club that they're like, no, that's not real historical fiction, because there's, like, magic and werewolves in it.
Yeah, we got started right off with a, like, discussion about policing of genres and what does that mean, and do you need to police genres or not?
Which I think is interesting, an interesting conversation.
And my argument in response was that it said on the spine that it was a historical romance.
It's all about the cataloger's discretion.
Like, if the publisher says it's a historical romance, then, like, they clearly know more about this than I do, so.
Clearly.
Gosh, yeah, if I was a publisher of historical romances, like, that seems like a bad idea.
What was the other one that you read that was about gravediggers or something?
I can't even remember the title. I only read the first chapter because that part was just about digging up dead bodies. And then, like, delivering them to a crazy Welsh mad scientist who wanted to do stuff with them, and his daughter or something who lived with him, and she had to, like, clean the bodies before they did stuff, and then it's like, oh, no, this most recent dead body is actually alive. And there was some really terrible description of a penis. I don't really remember if it was supposed to be, like, some, like, there was, like, a description of, like, a flaccid penis. I'm like, is this supposed to be, like, appealing?
No.
Some people might be into that. People that are into, like, Welsh grave-robbing romances.
So who was the romance supposed to be between in that scenario?
The girl and the not-corpse.
Okay. It's better than...
I think...
Mad Scientist and the Corpse, I guess?
I guess.
And then they ran off or something. I didn't bother reading the rest of it. Okay. The one I did read was Winter Blaze by Kristen Callahan, which is Darkest London Book 3, apparently. Hmm. And that is the one that I picked up because it mentioned the Society for the Suppression of the Supernatural and also Werewolf Attack. So, yeah, and it's vaguely set in, like, Victorian England, but it's not really at all. It's just like, yeah, there's no technology other than trains. So it was awful. Just really, really, not even disappointing, just bad. I thought it just was full of characters. The miscommunication thing, I'm just like, maybe you should talk to each other instead of running away to France. Like, maybe you shouldn't lie to your partner about what you do every day. That sort of thing. And also, like, weird non-consensual situations that made me uncomfortable.
Did you know it was a series before you started reading that book?
Yep. Yeah. I didn't care.
Yeah, okay. He's just curious. I mean, not all readers care if they're jumping into the middle of a series, but some do, and some are very completionist about, like, series. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the romance, especially the historical romance, they're very series-based these days.
Well, this was a series that was... It was not about the same person in each book, obviously. Though that would be kind of hilarious. It's just like, oh yes, my husband died, so now I have to find a new husband.
That series exists. You know,
I know. It's just like Eighth Duke or something. This one, so it was about, like, I think they were sisters or something, and so the first book was about one, the second book was about the next sister, and, like, they show up in the background as supporting characters, and then the next one is about some, like, new female character they introduced into this one because they didn't have any more sisters to marry.
You know, some of these series go into, like, you know, the cousins and the, like, uncles and like, the aunts and the, like, everybody vaguely related in the family all gets paired off.
So, spoilers.
Yeah. No! Spoilers!
The main female character is, like, half demon, so if it went into her cousins, it would actually just be demons.
Oh, okay. There
Which
you
would
go.
Be, like,
interesting.
Just demons romancing other demons, I hope.
Maybe.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the whole, like, family aspect, though, both of you did, because I feel like, so I read some Philippa Gregory books as a result of this challenge, and I had some qualms at the end about whether to classify them as romance at all, because they are based around, the ones I read anyway, are the ones mostly based around Henry VIII and his wives, and so in a sense, the books sort of do go through wives.
There we go.
But they're also, you know, they don't have the happy ending that may or may not be a criterion for romance, although they definitely do have some romancey stuff in them.
Yes.
So I read The Constant Princess, which is, I guess, the first of that series of her books, on the recommendation of a friend to whom I was complaining about having to select a historical romance. and so I finished that in time for, like, the meeting of the book club, and then I ended up going on and reading three more of her books because I was kind of on a kick. So after that, I read The Other Boleyn Girl, which is sort of the classic one that's sort of takes place centered around, like, Anne Boleyn and her conquest, if that's what you want to interpret it as, of Henry VIII.
Yeah.
So The Constant Princess was about Catherine of Aragon, which I actually found, I mean, like, historically and character-wise, really interesting. She was a really well-fleshed-out character. Mm. There were some really interesting pieces about living in kind of a more Muslim, like, Moorish world, and then having to come to England and marry the king. And even though she was really into it and sort of had known her whole life that this was her destiny, was to be Queen of England, she still, she sort of goes through this thing where she comes to grips with, like, her mother, Isabella of Castile, having cast out the Moors, and with them all of this, like, science and like, food preparation and hygiene. And English in that Tudor era, actually, by comparison, don't come off very well. In her early days in the court, she's sort of like, why don't you guys have salad? Why don't you shower every day? Like,
have you been to, like, medieval England?
Apparently not. But it was very different for her because of the Moorish influence, right? So she actually ends up doing things like starting a garden to, like, grow salad vegetables and stuff like this to have, like, a piece of home. And the romance part of it is she's actually destined to marry Arthur, who was Henry VIII's older brother.
Yeah.
And they have this, you know, they don't want to marry each other, but then they fall in love. And that part was very just, like, too perfect to be true. Like, they both wanted England to be a great country, and they actually fell in love with each other and had all these big plans, and then Arthur died. And then she sort of, you know, machinates her way into the good graces of the younger prince and sticks around and tries to make a go of being a good queen anyway. And then the rest of the books, the Boleyn girl, the Boleyn inheritance, go through sort of the queens that came after her. And in the other Boleyn girl, she comes off as quite a sympathetic character, despite the fact that she's being ousted. But I wonder, too, how much of that had to do with reading the series in order, which I mostly did.
That brings up a really interesting point about how much history some people might want in their historical romance. Because I feel like that might be a really strong draw for
some
people.
And these ones, like, definitely, if you are more into the history than the romance, I'd say that the three about, like, the Constant Princess and then the two Boleyn books are definitely the ones to read. The fourth one that I read was The Virgin's Lover, which is actually about Elizabeth. And I would, like, A, not recommend it in general, and B, definitely not recommend it to people who are into the history of the period, because Elizabeth is portrayed as just, like, I cannot think of a better word than ninny for how she's portrayed in that book. Like, basically, to create the effect of having her have this love affair with Robert Dudley and have all the sex and the romance that a romance needs, they turn her into just an idiot who's, like, you know, sacrificing the safety of her country and her goodwill with her people to be with this dude. Well,
isn't that what everyone would do, though?
I actually feel like there's a lot of characters like that, though, in these romance books that I was
reading. So maybe that's the most typical one that I read, then, in terms of the romance genre.
I kind of think so.
Yeah.
I kind of think so, because, I mean, so I actually, like you, Megan, I read a Sarah McLean book, or I started to, and I just couldn't do it. And I had also picked it up because it had been recommended from Book Riot from Rebecca Shinsky, and I thought, this is great.
Yeah.
And then I felt like the characters didn't behave in ways that made sense to their environment or their lives or who they were supposed to be. And I just could not get wrapped into the world that she presented because it had this kind of cultural aspect of being like a Regency era. And there were certain cultural, you know, what was behaviorally appropriate and not. And then it would break all those rules immediately so that the characters could be supposedly interesting in quotes and like, yeah, more sympathetic or more modern and as, you know, characters that would appeal to modern audiences. But then I just couldn't believe that that's how they would relate to their universe and the world that they were living in. So it just did not work for me.
That's totally some of what was going on with The Constant Princess as well. Like, it got more interesting once it was Catherine against the rest of the world, with her and Arthur sort of both wanting to create this, like, ideal kingdom. You're sort of like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, I mean, that's awesome, but, like, really, at that time?
Brings up an interesting question that I kind of wanted to ask people as well, which was, how did you pick your historical romances? Sam, I know you said, you know, someone just handed you a book, and for me, I know I went to Book Riot, because I was like, Rebecca Shinsky really likes these romances. Maybe they have recommendations. And that's actually how I picked most of my books, was off of that particular list. And it's a trouble I have with a lot of genres when I don't understand them very well. But
I was so lost. This was the, for those who maybe not know, this was the first book we did for the Masochist Book
Club.
First genre we did. And I, at the time, was kind of, like, super stressed out just with stuff in my life and was totally just, like, bah! Like chicken with my head cut off. And we chose this genre, and I just, like, didn't even know what to do. And I ended up probably doing, like, the worst possible thing that one can do in this situation. Well, I don't know, even know why I did this, but I went to Amazon, and I found all the free Kindle ebooks.
Someone had to do it.
Well, yeah, the reason I did that, and maybe this sounds like kind of naive in retrospect, but I thought all historical romances were the same. I really thought they were just all penny dreadfuls, and I just didn't think there was any variance in the genre at all. And that's my, you know, naivete.
I don't know. We got it. Go for it. We got it.
So that, I think that's why I chose that strategy. Like, I just didn't think that there was any variance in the genre. So I was just like, a historical romance is a historical romance. So
they all got the same covers.
They all have the same covers. Yeah, they're all of heaving bosoms and whatever. So I downloaded... I knew that there was, like, Regency and blah, 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 and I decided to go for some pirate novels because I thought, well, pirates are cool. I like pirates. Yeah. Like, I'm down with that. So I downloaded Sea Scoundrel by Annette Blair and Captive to a Pirate by Lilith Bell. And I read about 10 pages of Sea Scoundrel and went, this is bullshit. And I did not finish it. It just starts out with this, you know, virginal girl getting on a ship with, like, tanned, six-packed pirates who are charming and
does that not making sound innuendo. Like a good time?
And it, well, it was so poorly written.
It
and
does
I
sound
just...
very historically accurate.
it was just so unappealing to me in every single possible way I could think of. I even was like, I'm gonna read, you know, I got 10% into the book, I think, on my phone. I thought, okay, I'm gonna read 10% a day. And like, I think I didn't even read that second 10%, so... I'm sorry, you guys. I let everyone down. That was how I chose my books.
But that's okay. We're not policing this at all.
I thought that was interesting, though. So you went to Book Riot into that recommendation, and that's the same reason why I chose Sarah McLean was Rebecca Shinsey. But I think this was a good reminder to me that just because you listen to a reviewer and you enjoy their reviews and their process of doing that doesn't always mean that they read the same as you. Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, like, so I really enjoy Rebecca Shinsey's podcast that she's on and her voice and the way she talks about reading and authors, and I think it's fascinating. But then the truth is, I don't really read super similar to her. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if I really wanted to make a good selection on a lot of books, I'm better off picking from her fellow Liberty Hardy, who also does the All the Books podcast with Rebecca Shinsey, and she's much closer to me as a reader. But I didn't think of that at the time. I just was like, all right, this is one I've heard before, and I like this person's voice, but I didn't think about, do we actually read in a similar way?
It takes a while to figure that out.
Yeah. To figure out, well, it's interesting to remember that reviewers that we know have tastes, too. And they're not going to be the same as yours, and you actually have to think about that when you're going through this.
I actually used to read this one person's reviews because they had the exact opposite taste to me. And so if they hated a book, I'm like, oh, maybe I should check it out. And if they loved it, I was like, need to avoid that one for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
I knew that a lot of romance books aren't cataloged in libraries, so I wasn't going to search them in the library system. And so I literally just went to the library and looked at every book that said historical romance on the spine. And then I read the back of them and thought they were all terrible, and far too many rakes and dukes.
The dukes and the rakes, yes, there's a lot of them.
And then, yeah, so I picked the one that had a werewolf and the one that had a sword fight and the one that had a corpse robber, and I read one of them.
Yeah, I actually cannot even remember how I ended up selecting mine. I think I tried a little bit. I went back to authors that were similar to authors that I had read in the past and looked at a little bit. But I also specifically tried to do some, like, Scottish romance, and it did not go well for me. It turns out I don't have a thing for Highlanders at all.
Not kilts. At all.
Yeah, no, apparently kilts just don't do it.
But you just see those in Vancouver anyway, so it's not as big a deal.
But those are Utila kilts. Very different look.
Is
that cleaning company with the dudes in kilts on them?
I did not know there was...
You see that's the van the all the time, and it's got the...
Yeah, it's got the dudes and the kilts.
Isn't it just called, like, Men in Kilts or something?
It might be, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm going to be looking out for this.
Also, it'll, like, go up to SFU on a weekday evening, and the bagpipers will be practicing.
Awesome.
Now I know how to find them locally. I don't know that it helps me, because like I said, it didn't do much for me. But
oh, okay, so you don't need a leaf blower then.
No, not so much.
I do think it's interesting that that is one of the genres that has so many, like, sub-genres of this. Is like the weird olden days Scotland thing. And I'm just like, why is this so appealing to people? Right. Is it the kilts? I don't understand.
The accent, except that you can't. Well, that was one of the problems I had with ones that I read.
Did they write it like?
Yes, they wrote it in.
Honestly, the thing is, I'm assuming it was written like Trainspotting.
I would have liked that.
That would be kind of hilarious.
I wonder if it's something to do with, like, I feel like whether it's accurate or not, the kind of pop conception of, like, medieval Scotland is sort of this marriage between, like, the civility of England and the, like, barbarism of the, like, tribes in the very north or whatever. Yeah, right, exactly, right? Yeah.
I feel like
just enough barbarism.
Yeah, and it's a very, like, alpha male kind of driven perception of what it would be like.
I don't remember what that article was that we read about.
We did read something about the alpha male perception and, like,
we did talk a lot about it in that.
That's another way in which the Virgin's Lover fits in, actually, is that Dudley is very much an alpha male. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there is, like, I was reading somebody a while back who was talking about, like, how to do reader's advisory for those readers who prefer the beta male, and how to find those books where the male is not that kind of, like, can't talk about my feelings, brooding, controlling, overpowering presence.
No subject heading for that.
we gotta institute one here, because I thought that was interesting, too, because
that seems
I'm like
it would have a lot less drama. Just be like, oh, no, I actually do like you.
Well,
just cut out 300 pages
actually,
of misunderstandings.
Actually, you just have outside forces ripping them apart instead of, like, inability to communicate.
Which sounds much more interesting to me, because the inability to communicate trope is not
just
one.
It's just so annoying.
It's very annoying, yeah.
I feel like there is a way to do it. Like, that's the frustrating part, because, like, there's these shitty pulp romance novels that can't do it well, and then there's Pride and Prejudice, you know? Like, there is a way to do that.
To do miscommunication
in a nuanced way, which makes it even more frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have actually read some romance novels, but not historical romance, and I read one, it was like a modern one, with two women, and they had communication difficulties, but one of them had like a lot of anxiety. And I thought that was kind of well done as well, like they also had trouble communicating, but the one girl just had all these like crazy habits and things like that, and all this stress and anxiety, and that was
the stem of
the communication issues.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you, Sam. There could be a way to do it.
I'm kind of amused by the difference between, like, the cutoff date between contemporary and historical romances, where everything is, like, 50 years. And so I imagine that romance writers are like, great, it's 2015, now we can write about 1965, and it's half this historical romance.
I know. It's a kind of funny because it is, like, it's like, 50 years prior to when it was written, but then, like, truthfully, like, nothing past, like, maybe World War II is actually being considered.
I feel like, though, if you read a romance that was written in 1980 now, that would totally count. Because you don't even have to ask for all that much accuracy, because they're writing modern, so it's accurate for their time.
Maybe.
There. But does that still count as historical romance, or is that, like, I don't know, historic romance or something?
Yeah. I think there's a difference, is that historical romance is supposed to be written about the past,
okay,
as opposed to just things that were written in the past.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a definite.
Otherwise, I would have just read some Jane Austen.
Yes. No, yeah, it is. That much, like, 50 years prior to... Based in an era that is 50 years prior from the time in which it was written, puts it as a historical. And then the romance part is, like, happy ever after ending, and, like, the storyline is really driven by a romance.
So did everyone find out that there was a happy ending, or a purported happy ending?
I didn't get that far.
Yeah. You didn't get to 99%.
I can do it right now. It's on my phone. I'm going to look at the last page.
Mine did have a happy ending that was after some ridiculous Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, mine did.
Yeah, all of mine had happy endings.
See, mine didn't, but they were still, they weren't happy endings, but they were expected endings, because they're rooted in specific historical figures, right?
Yeah.
You knew all these women were going to die.
So you still knew the ending, which is basically, like, the point of the happy ever after ending is we know the ending. We know how it's going to turn out. But in this instance, we know it's not going to turn out well, but we still know it.
Mm-hmm. There's actually, technically, mine had, like, there was an afterword by the author that included a recipe for things that the main character apparently liked to eat while they were pregnant.
grovelly romance thing I've heard ever.
Pretty ridiculous.
That's fun. I don't know, man. We have an ebook here that is dedicated to Edward Cullen. I think that's the most romancy thing.
Did you see Gray?
No.
Just frightened.
I touched it at the library by accident. Oh, and then I had to wash my hands.
Okay, so I actually didn't mention the books that I finished.
Oh, go ahead.
So I finished Marrying the Royal Marine by Carla Kelly, which was an interesting one because unlike the previous ones that I had read that were historical regency romances, this was a what's called a regencies or a regency romance. I know this is like the ridiculousness of how these are labeled is really bad. The difference is that the regency romance apparently is essentially the gentle version, and it tends to be a little more historically accurate and a little more accurate about the social mores of the time. Mm-hmm. And so it tends to be less sexual and sensual, and it builds up more through their interactions. It's a story around the interactions of these people falling in love, as opposed to the story of all the sex that happens before they finally get together, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I actually kind of enjoyed that one.
No, it sounded really. Was that the one where he was on a crusade or something?
Yeah, it was. So what it was set in the Napoleonic Wars, but it was actually based in Portugal. And so he was in the Royal Marines. She was going across to be with her sister, who, in a previous book that I did not read, had married a doctor who was based in Portugal. So they were in Portugal, and she was going across to be with them to help out at the hospital there. And then somehow she gets wrapped up in something that's going on there and ends up kidnapped along with this Royal Marine by Napoleon's forces. And so they're going to be ransomed, so they're getting dragged all over battling Portugal, trying to get ransomed and safely get out of the situation, and meanwhile falling in love. And now the difference with Carla Kelly is there was one sex scene in there. Shocking. There was one sex scene in there, whereas some of the other Regency romances don't have any at all. There's no on-screen sex, which I thought was very interesting. But supposedly, so from what I was reading about this genre, because then I got curious about it, because I was oh, I actually kind of enjoyed that one, this is a dying off genre. It's no longer very popular. So people prefer the historical Regency romances where there's lots of sex and it's lots more sizzling and happening and maybe a little less accurate to the time period, but there's a lot of,
interesting. They want more
sexy times.
Yeah.
So how did people feel reading the terrible sex scenes?
Some of them weren't terrible, even if they weren't historically accurate, which I appreciated, even if I knew they weren't historically accurate. I mean, I don't really want to read rape scenes.
You mean in terms of the levels of consent and communication and how
consent and communication and even the types of sex that they were having?
Yeah. But actually, so I had in the past read one that I did really enjoy, which was called A Week to Be Wicked by Tessa Dare. Yeah. And that one I had enjoyed because it was hilarious. It was genuinely funny and
intentionally?
Yes. Intentionally genuinely funny, yes. It was very witty, very clever, and nobody was intentionally cruel to each other and nobody was just selfish and mean to another person. They were just they made an agreement because they both wanted something, and making this agreement could get them what they wanted, and then they got themselves into just ridiculous, redonkulous situations, and it was hilarious, and they made silly mistakes, and they laughed it off themselves, just like I was laughing with them, and it was fun. And so I've always recommended that one to people as a good romance to try.
Yeah,
but I've read some other stuff by her, and some has been better than others. That's the only one I've truly been I just genuinely enjoyed that book.
Yeah.
I mean, to answer Matthew's questions, Philip and Gregory's sex scenes are interesting because, the issue of consent is an interesting one in these situations because most of the women who married Henry VIII, if they didn't actively want to, Anne is portrayed as wanting, they knew they had to. Mm-hmm. And so they were kind of okay, think of England. It's not totally without consent, but it's also they're doing it for political reasons or for family reasons, and they're just sort of getting through it. That said, there are a couple of quite if not affectionate, then at least sort of, you know, consensual and, like, mutually enjoyed scenes between Anne and Henry, which one of which is translated as a rape scene in the film that was made of The Other Boleyn Girl.
Whoa!
Like, there are fewer sex scenes in that movie, and the one that is actually done on screen is portrayed as rape, which is strange. But I guess maybe they felt like their viewers would accept it as more historically accurate if it wasn't consensual. I don't know.
I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. It was odd. I got mad when I got to that part of the movie. I was like, I just read this. Like, she was into it.
There's enough rape. I don't need more rape where there wasn't before.
Exactly. A Game of Thrones problem, right? I think the most hilarious of the sex scenes are the ones in The Virgin's Lover because Elizabeth is just, like, panting for it ridiculously. And also because there's a lot of pretty, like, if not accurate, then at least detailed descriptions of the condom that Dudley uses. Because it's a secret that she's having any sex at all, so there's no way she can get pregnant, right? And that was interesting from a historical perspective.
Oh, interesting.
Sheepskin, I think, or something?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's for people that have, like, allergies.
I'm really liking the look that's being exchanged.
Like, what? I've heard it's a thing, but I've never actually seen them in stores or anything.
I don't know where you get them.
Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Matthew, where do you buy them, Matthew? Shoppers? Shoppers Drug Mart?
Oh, yeah, totally, I'm sure.
Ask the pharmacist.
All right, so an imaginary reader is coming up to you and they want historical romance.
Freak out.
Go on a break.
Deer in the headlights look.
So what kind of conversation do you strike up with them?
How much sex do you want?
Yeah.
How much, and, like, are you okay with terrible sex?
Like, right now, or, like, in the book?
I feel like that might be the second or third question I would ask.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's how much sex, and then how explicit the sex is, because I've read ones where there's a decent amount of sex, but there's a lot of, like, fade to blackness.
Yeah, Gregor's got a lot of that, too.
So, that's an issue. But then, whether they have preferences for how historical versus how romantic their historical romance is.
And what period, obviously.
Yeah, what period if they have a preference. Mm-hmm. If they're more about certain types of characters, whether they got a thing about the brooding alpha or they really want some more beta action.
Whether or not they can tolerate any of this, the paranormal ideas into there. I actually tried another one that was a Victorian one that had ghosts in it, except I got entirely bored by the romance part, and I kept skipping all of the scenes in which they were supposedly falling in love in order to read all of the paranormal and all the mystery.
I feel like that happens in movies sometimes. It's like, why is this in here?
Skip that scene.
Did any of us find any, like, LGBT historical romances? Or look for them?
I found some on Amazon. There was a bunch of male-male gay ones.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to read the cowboy one, but I couldn't find it anywhere. Also, Sarah Waters.
Right. Actually, that was something I was going to mention earlier. I think if I was to go back and do it all again, I'd actually really like to read Sarah Waters' Tipping the Velvet. It's actually been on my to-do list. List for a long time. I did start reading it years ago. I read the first couple chapters, and it's just gone by the wayside. I've never read it, and I've wanted to for a long time because I love the BBC specials. So I think if I went back and did it again, I would read Sarah Waters. So that would be a lesbian one.
Interesting. Well, that's an interesting question in terms of the diversity of these books and whether or not our patrons are able to find what they're actually, like, find something that seems relevant to them and true to their experiences of the world and actually about people that they could feel like they would have been in the past.
But overwhelmingly, it does seem like a heterosexual white.
Yeah.
It's definitely seen that way, and I think it's overwhelmingly written that way.
At one point, I went and was looking at this website that had everything broken down into, like, all the many, like, far too many historical romance subgenres. And I say far too many because I'd be like, ooh, ancient Sumerian, let me find out about this, and be like, no results. I'm like, why is this even an option?
It could happen.
Yeah, like, it's like set up just so that it could be like, oh, let me look at these Mayan romances. I'm like, no, there's nothing there.
Aww. I actually found a Goodreads list that was, like, Mayan and Aztec and such romances, but they were both, like, historical and contemporary, and many of them were very obscure and chancy authors and didn't look terribly high quality, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't look much further after I got this book handed to me, but certainly I think the Gregory books absolutely fall into the, like, white heteronormative. Yeah. Even if, and actually there is a character in The Other Boleyn Girl who we would classify as gay today, but he's sort of a peripheral character. He's the brother of the two Boleyn girls. Mm-hmm. But that was interesting. That was maybe the only piece of, like, non-standard representation in there.
And some of that is probably the writers themselves, maybe less nowadays, but certainly in the past, is just writing out those characters that would have existed during that time period. So with the sort of a rise with a greater diversity of writers and sort of subject matter, hopefully that would change. Like, we would get historical romance with actual gay writers, with actual some history into it. But
mm-hmm. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, I remember finding something at some point that was about, like, historical romance of African-American slaves, and, you know, like the early 1800s, but, like...
Yeah.
It's not a huge amount of it.
Especially not in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if you took a wider lens, if you'd find more, like, I'm thinking of things like Jazz by Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. It's a romance, it's historical, it's also kind of a murder mystery, but...
Genre blending again.
Yeah. And also if we read in different languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, that came up in our group, is we have one member of our group is... speaks Farsi, and she was talking about romance literature, and Farsi would tend to have more of, it would come off of culturally known fables or historical events, and it would take characters that were already culturally well known from those fables or those historical events and create and build out their relationship.
Okay.
So it's a different understanding of what historical romance is and how it should be played out. And so then when you come here and try to look through the historical romance, it doesn't look the same as you would expect from what you're used to in your culture's literature, which is an interesting.
Be kind of like if all our historical romances were based either in Arthurian legend or the Bible or something.
Yeah.
Different view of what it should be like.
So, before we do anything else, I do want to talk about one of the terrible, terrible sex scenes in my book.
Yeah, you asked the question, then you didn't answer it.
It affected me deeply, because it was like advice straight out of, like, 19th century Cosmo. Like, as in, you don't want to follow this. So, if you ever happen to have ice powers, do not suddenly use them on a guy without his consent while going down on him. Just helpful advice to everybody in the audience. Don't do this. He seemed to be into it, but still, like, ask first.
If I ever find myself with ice powers.
Ice powers!
That's not what I'm using for.
No, not really.
All the ice cubes in the world first.
I don't know if that's what I'd use mine for either, but okay.
Ice skating whenever you want.
Oh, okay.
Sure. I can't ice skate.
Do we have our own made-up historical romance genres that we created?
Matthew had put up a little message thing wanting to know if people would make up genres, but I don't think many of us got the chance.
No, I was at work all day and brain dead.
Anna did, so tell us yours.
Okay, my made-up genre was I want historical mummy romance. Like, historical fiction about mummies.
Ew, why?
Yes. Just because. Because I had to make up a genre.
You had a very specific type.
I had a very specific type. I actually specifically wanted them set during that era of, like, the late 1880s to early 1900s, when the British were kind of fiddling around in Egypt, but weren't officially there. But, you know, having this, like, colonialism moment in Egypt. And then it turns out...
I was so happy because I knew one. I knew a historical romance about mummies.
Historical mummy
and a girl
romance.
Set in the same time period.
Did they actually romance the mummies?
Yes, literally. It's about a girl and a mummy. They fall in love.
I'm not into this.
Did you ever see the movie where they tried to make a zombie version of Twilight?
No.
Warm Bodies.
Yeah.
It was so cute.
Aww. I didn't actually see it.
It was actually really cute and clever.
Okay, I have a genre.
It's called The Professor's Daughter. It's a graphic novel by Joanne Safar and Emmanuel Guibert. So, see?
And then I read it too, and I completely forgot.
Does it not fulfill the criteria, though?
It does.
Yes, it does.
It's totally.
And it's good.
Mummy romance from that very particular time period.
Yeah.
Totally is. It was good.
What was your genre, Amanda?
Oh, well, you were talking earlier about historical romance of, like, using historical figures or something. Yeah. And I got to thinking, this probably already exists, but I didn't think to look for it. Using historical figures or fable figures. So a historical romance about, like, Morgan Le Fay or, you know, Joan of Arc or something like that would be pretty cool, I think.
Oh, well,
I could see how I'd be into that.
I wonder if there's...
Especially if it was lesbian.
you want Morgan Le Fay slash Joan of Arc?
Yeah, I do! I would read it, find it for me.
Matthew's really good at that. It's
Matthew is great at this kind of thing.
It'd be interesting to look at all the tropes that we've sort of unearthed in this conversation and compare them to, like, the lists of OTP prompts for fan fiction that you find on, like, Tumblr or whatever. You know, the, like, heart comfort situations and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, I'm like, would it be historical fiction if it was about Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner while they were filming Star Trek at this point? Isn't that 50 years ago? Uh-huh. So that
like, seems like
historical real people fan fiction.
Yep.
Romance. Like, really gross and horrible. I hate real people fan fiction. But yeah, sure. Is that your pick?
now it is. Star Trek actors historical fiction.
I really want that romance about the girl and her rocket.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
But that's or her spaceship.
That's not historical romance, though.
Could be. Historical in the future.
What if it's set in, like, Star Wars times?
Oh, a long time ago.
Yes.
There we go.
Or you could just have it be set at, like, NASA.
Isn't that just, like, a space opera romance at that point?
Not necessarily. Not if you're romancing your ship.
That's something very specific.
Oh, like ancillary justice? That sort of romance in your ship?
I was thinking of, what is it, the ship who sang, which is like Anne McCaffrey's version of...
Oh, I've never read
that. Little sentient ship.
Anyone else have a genre?
I like the ones that we've come up with so far.
All right. The other one I was trying to find was caveman romance.
Oh,
there is some.
Then someone
there
suggested some, and so I was kind of
Planet
disappointed.
Planet of the Cave Bear. I really did not like that.
I read that too.
There's the one, there's the, that horrible, like, Canadian one from the 70s about the woman and the bear.
Yes.
It's just called Bear, isn't
it's
it?
It's called Bear. Yeah, that's not my pick, to clarify. It is a thing that exists.
What I like was is that she's supposed to be both an archivist and a slash librarian.
Yeah. Of course she is.
Has anybody else read it?
I was at a reading of Bad Fiction where parts of it were read out.
Okay.
And it also won, like, an award that year for, like, Best Canadian Book, which I am convinced that it was the only book published in Canada that year. And so it won by default. They're like, well, this is it, so guess so.
I mean, I don't have a genre, but I think, not to get back up on the high horse or anything, but I think that, yeah, as librarians, we should maybe start seeing if we can unearth some of those less conventional pairings in historical romance and kind of, you know, promote them a little more. We need diverse books, right?
Yeah, We need diverse historical romance. I totally agree.
I'd like to see more of those.
Well, I think on that note, that's a wrap.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. You can find us on Tumblr at bookclub4, as in the numeral, m.tumblr.com, on Twitter at bookclub4m, on Pinterest at pinterest.com/bookclub4m, and on Goodreads, where you'll just have to search for Book Club for Masochists.
On our Tumblr, you can find reviews and thoughts on books that might not have gotten discussed today, show notes that provide links to things that we mentioned, and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment.
We would like to give acknowledgement to the Vancouver Public Library for use of their Inspiration Lab, where we record this show. Any faults with the audio quality are all our fault.
Come back next time when we inflict upon you the genre of gothic literature, if I can find the file.
Do we ever get to read erotica? Is that on the genre list?
It is.
Okay. I couldn't remember. One day.